You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
I'm Lee Brown, and this is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. Today's conversation is really for my real estate pros who perhaps need some counsel when it comes to their own finances, which is also information you can transfer to your clients. And if you're not in real estate, you probably need this advice too. So enjoy this conversation with Sarah Ponder. She's a certified financial planner. And frankly, she does have a little bit of language that might need earmuffs if you have little people, but it's totally worth it and great. So just enjoy the conversation. I'll see you on the other side. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning. How are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
It is fine. We are at an Airbnb in Bentonville, Arkansas.
Nice.
For a month. And I'm realizing they like decorated it with this is like garlic. So I'm going to take that down.
I don't know. He's vampire away. So maybe a vampire was going to log into the episode and they've now run for the hills. I was wondering if that's Longaberger behind you because that's definitely really expensive basketry that should be decorative, but I don't really know if it's just what they found.
And I don't know. This is like what it is. That's how they like decorated
that. Oh, there's a hat too. Two hats.
Yeah.
Oh, festive.
Yeah. And there's a couple of hats in like all the bedrooms. We have toddlers and they're like, oh no, God, leave the cat.
So I'd probably let them play with the hats and then hang it back on the wall, but that would make me a bad Airbnb guest. You didn't hear me say that. Don't give me less than 5 stars.
I know.
Yes, because I love Airbnb. So good morning and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right. So tell us a little bit about who Sarah is. And if we have viewers and listeners that don't know how hard it is to become a certified financial planner, you can toss in anything about your credentials, but give them a story before we dig in.
Absolutely. Well, I'm Sarah Ponder. I am the owner and founder of Real Estate Wealth Planning, which is a fee-only fiduciary financial planning words, a whole shit ton of F words right there.
I mean, really, it is.
It is. In fact, I send folks this video at the beginning that's like, what are all these F words? Fee-only, fiduciary, financial planner. I'm not going to get into that today because we don't really have the time, but why not? So I'm based in Austin, Texas. I primarily work with real estate professionals as clients. And then I also work with your clients as an investment manager, financial planner, whenever they've got inheritance, move up, move down, whatever they kind of need. But let me tell you about how hard it is to become a certified financial planner. It is hard. It's a tough test. This actually is a like crazy shit story.
Right.
So my husband is a real estate agent, which is how I started working with real estate agents. And long story short, I have a bachelor's degree in sociology, which is not as useless as it sounds.
Not when you're pillow talking with your husband about his clients. You're like, hey, baby, try this.
Right. Exactly. No, it's the study of people, which is great in sales and client relationships. But my mother definitely like handed me a job you can get with a sociology degree in 2006 when I graduated, and I did not take any of those jobs. But long story short, I've had a lot of careers. I've worked with a lot of different people. And somehow I ended up after my MBA getting a job at an investment firm here in Austin called Dimensional Fund Advisors. Great firm. I use a lot of their products currently with my client portfolios, basically because they're cheap and easy. But here's the funny story. I don't know why they hired me in the first place because I didn't have the financial. I mean, I like had people skills and I had an MBA and like taken 2 finance classes. And I still don't know why they hired me, but I had a great time while I was there. And they offered to pay for my CFP. And I thought it would be a good idea to just do that over maternity leave. Like, why not? So
wait a minute. This had to be the first baby when you did not know what you were doing.
Yeah. So it started with the first baby. It gets better. So had my first baby, Lucy, February of 2018. So she's 5. And she's a couple weeks old. And I'm like, okay, it's probably time to start doing my coursework. So I start doing my online coursework on that maternity leave. I go back to work. Shit gets a little hard for the next few months. I kind of put it off. And then I get pregnant again. Second baby, Hank, they're 18 months apart. So it's August of 2019. Oh, it gets better. And you have to complete 6 courses to get the CFP. And I did them online, self-paced. And then you got to do this like capstone project. And Hank is due on August 24th of 2019, which is, I think, a Thursday or a Friday, something like that. and it's August in Texas and it is like real fucking hot. Real hot. So, but it's okay to say that right on this podcast.
I have an E on my partner, which is, I'm pretty proud of that little black E.
And so I was like, this baby is coming out by August 20th. I need those 4 extra days of like not being this hot. So August 20th is a Tuesday. I was supposed to get induced with him on that Tuesday. The Friday before, I am like working my ass off to get this presentation thing done and turned in. And I start having contractions.
Because of course.
I'm like.
Now we know.
And so,
by the way, Hank gave away all his personality on that day right there.
Oh, he's something. So lucky for me, it was just false labor, which is apparently very common in your second. So we went to the hospital and then the contraction slowed down a few hours later. So I get home and I like bust my ass to get that thing done. And I turn it on Sunday. And then lo and behold, I get induced on Tuesday and he comes like a freight train. No meds, no nothing. That doctor had to run into that hospital to catch the baby. I get there, they induce me at like, I don't know, 7:30. And it's like not going very quickly. And they're like, oh yeah, we're gonna be here all day. And I'm like, no, I'm hungry. I'm gonna have lunch. And they have to break my water about 9:30. And they're like, it's still gonna be a while. And I'm like, no, I'm gonna have lunch. That baby is born by 11:30. And I had lunch.
Your third baby's going to get here in like 5 minutes then. So you should be aware of that.
So the funny thing is she took a while. So, yeah. Same protocol, but she waited till like freaking 9 or 10 p.m. I was really upset about that.
And so what was your grade on that capstone project that you're finishing?
That's the only one I got an A on. Everything else I got a B because I am like really good at getting Bs. But then, so after you finish all these courses, you then have to actually take an exam. And I don't know what the pass rate is. It's probably 60% or something. It's like the number of people who take it and actually pass the first time. So I did pass. That's the punchline, obviously, because I have those letters behind my name. But the exam is 2 parts, 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the afternoon. And I was like, I don't know, 6 weeks postpartum, maybe 8, something like that. Which means I had to pump.
Not sleep and emotionally do this.
Yep. So luckily, Hank was a great sleeper and I had some like time built in and some help to help me study. But I only had enough time to study. I studied like around the clock for like a month before that test and then took the morning portion, went to my car, parked by a fence, pumped during lunch, and then took the afternoon portion and passed.
And just for the record, you're probably the only CFP on the planet who got it done on the first time that fast and pumped in between segments. But y'all, you have to know when you're looking at financial people, CFPs are rare, like really rare because of the amount of time it takes to do all the homework to get through those classes. So it's a big deal. But to pump your way through it means you're probably going to have to update your marketing somehow because it's...
You know the funny
pump through the CFP, ponder how she can do all the things at the same time. We use your name in 1,000 ways.
So the funny thing is I had actually totally blocked that memory out until a year or two ago. I was in the airport. I'd gone to a financial planning conference with some of my peers. And it's kind of a big conference. There's probably like 500 of us there. So I didn't know everybody there. But I ended up catching an Uber to the airport with somebody who I hadn't met at the conference. Very nice mid-40s or 50s guy. And he was asking me about my CFP. So I told him the basics of the story. But I left out the part about pumping because I, honest to God, did not remember it. And then he asked me, he was like, oh, I bet you had to pump like while you're taking that test. And I was like, oh my God, I did. And I like now very clearly remember moving my car so that I'm like right in front of a fence and not right in front of the fucking door.
Wife must have just had a kid for him to be that focused on the pump.
Yeah, I think he may have. But yeah, so he like literally brought that memory back for me.
All right, so you're kind of a unicorn in the financial planner space because the vast majority that we encounter on the real estate side are very anti-real estate and they would actually...
And they're men.
Well, that's very true. But they'll tell them, just do the equities market. If you're nervous, do some bonds over here. Let's toss in some muni. And let's do some easy spiders. They want to give them everything except real estate. And one of the things that we desperately need as real estate counselors is financial partners who can say, yes, real estate has a place as part of your diversification strategy, especially if we're working with multiple property investors who got to talk 1031s and they got to do some complicated advanced tax strategies. So I'd love to to know how you start that conversation with an investor, a normal setup. So like the normal person whose 401k rolled over to their IRA, now they've got $100,000 sitting in their account. They've only ever had the Vanguard funds that came from their company. They call me as their real estate pro and say, I want to invest. One of the first things I say is, let's talk the financial strategy. Let's talk about the tax picture. How do we set everything up? Because we got to have a whole team. Where do you start somebody when they come to you with a lump sum and say part of it should be in real estate?
That's a great question. My answer is probably not what you'd expect because everybody is different. And I know like that's sort of an adage, but it is honest to God true. And rules of thumb, they're great for most people. And I'll give you a couple. One is, I would say most of my clients are kind of 50% equities, cash, bonds, whatever, and probably 50% real estate, somewhere in that like 40 to 60 band, basically. But it's not for everybody. I have some clients that are 100% one way or the other. And the reason honestly just boils down to like who you are and like what your life is like and what liabilities you have coming up, what kind of cash flow needs you have. Like, are you about to pay $200,000 for college over the next couple of years? If so, you probably need to have some cash on hand in some form or fashion. Not that I'm suggesting you do that, but some people have already committed to something, right? And so they're already kind of in that boat. And so everyone's life is different. That's the first thing I'll say. So my process is to take in some data, but then I don't give any answers until after we've had what I call an imagination vision meeting, where we really map out how you really want to spend your time and your treasure and what your vision and values are. Because if you don't do that, I can't tell you what the best place is to put your money. Because at the end of the day, almost any investment is fine. Almost. As long as the investment makes sense to you, makes sense to your goals, and is economically viable, it's fine. Our goal here is not literally to get the very best returns. Our goal here is to fund the life that you want to have. And for some people, that means a stock portfolio. I mean, maybe you inherit it and you've got some capital gains. I've got that happening all the time with clients. Maybe it's real estate that you plan to hold 15, 20, 25 years, or it could be a mix of the two. So there's not a prescription. The only prescription I have is that you have to do some life planning and identify how you want to spend your time and your treasure, meaning your dollars and your cents, and what are your vision and what your values. After we know that, then we'll talk about strategy.
If you are remotely awake, then you know that we are heading into some really tricky economic times. We have home buyers that have put the kibosh on buying. We have sellers who have found out suddenly their houses aren't dipped in 14 karat gold. And as a realtor, you are still trying to keep up with the business you have and trying to answer questions in the meantime while also managing sky high fuel cost at the pump. Never fear, because my new video course is coming out right now and it's called How to Dominate During a Recession. I've been a realtor for 22 years. My business went up every year during the Great Recession, and it's all because of education. This course is 4 modules. There might even be some bonus content for you. The price is $199. I am delighted to bring this out as quickly as possible because, friends, there's no time like the present to make sure our neighbors are stronger and we protect the American dream. Click on this link, www.dominatethisrecession.com, and I'll see you there. Now, back to this amazing content. So funny, because that's so intuitively basic. And it's the one thing we have a hard time getting clients to do is sit down and think about things before they things, which is wild because that money does burn a hole in your pocket. Or they watched some webinar or saw some Instagram post. Somebody who says, invest here and make the money. Here's an investment. I'll write you a check. You're like, whoa, wait. Whoa. And I had somebody call me last week. I want to buy some investment real estate. I said, great, let's chat about it. They said, no, send me some properties. I'm like, I could send you everything in the market. Because it could all be a different kind of investment, but they're not all suited for everybody. I buy inexpensive C-class multifamily because I want to provide affordable housing. A lot of people don't have for that, but that's okay. So now let me ask a question, because when you're thinking about, would you say imagination vision session? So if you're going to have an imagination vision session with a top producing realtor, which I know that's one of your specialty groups that you serve, our people make a lot, spend a lot, and then they start selling more houses. And so then they make more and then they spend more. And I have found in my years of coaching professionals that realtors have a very hard time not spending everything they make. And then they get to a panic point at some point in their personal life and say, holy shit, I don't have a 401k or a pension. And maybe they no longer have a spouse. And they're thinking, what is your strategy for structuring that imagination session for a commission-led life where somebody may have a high level of success? And that also comes with a little bit of, how do we say it nicely, ego, that they would have to decide to listen to the Sarah Ponder advice on things. Get a little insight. They're all listening, but they know who I've called out. I just called you out. Go ahead and hit me up in the comments and I'll send you.
And if you're already my client and that's your story and you know who you are, you better listen to us too.
No, your client should reply to my people who are commenting now and say, actually, you should listen to Sarah and newly stepped on your toes. So carry on.
All right. Let me blow your mind here, Lee. There are two ways to get wealthy. Okay. There's actually three ways to get wealthy. Let me define wealth first. Wealth is the ability to wake up in the morning and do whatever the fuck you want to do. That is wealth. It is not a number. So wipe that out of your brain. Wipe it out of your brain.
Say it again, Mama. Say it again for the people in the back.
Wealth is the ability to wake up in the morning and do whatever the fuck you want to do.
It's not rocket science.
It is not rocket science.
Until you listen to what your children are listening to. Well, you're not. I have my children are 17 and 18. So at some point, Lucy and Hank are going to be like mine heading off to school. The music that they listen to is abhorrent. And I would love it if they not listen to holy music. They all talk about they bag. They want to get the bag. And wealth, like it's somebody else's bag of money that they got to go collect. And y'all, I will tell you the same thing about your sales goals if you're selling real estate. It's not about how many you sell or what your volume is. It has to do with what you take home after
the profit.
So that you can then take that profit and turn it into wealth, which is wake up and I'll say have freedom. I'll be the wholesome one here. I'll balance.
Okay, thank you. I usually don't get to do this, but I was, you know, I was told I got to do that today.
And plus you're in Austin, so I think it's part of your normal day-to-day.
It is. It really
anyway,
is.
Anyway, I interrupted you. That's the very-
So that's the definition. Step one is understand the definition, that it is not a number. Honestly, I don't know if Elon Musk is wealthy. I honestly don't know. I don't know.
He's probably highly leveraged, which does not make you wealthy.
Well, he probably is waking up and doing exactly what he wants to do every day.
Yeah, but part of me has changed the world. So we'll cut him a little slack.
Yeah.
Rogan probably has both, actually. And he's in Austin. Probably. So I'm really jealous that he's your neighbor.
Probably. So here's the three ways to get wealthy. Number one, inherit. You were born lucky. Cool. Good for you. Nothing wrong with it.
Not me. Is that you?
No.
Okay. We're not category one friends.
No, but these days, like the baby boomer generation is starting to die. That wealth transfer is starting to happen. And some of them, like I have a client that inherited basically enough money to live the rest of their lives comfortably. They're around 50 and they're not splashy people. And their parents did it also not by being splashy people. They were teachers and they inherited a couple million bucks. And it was just through, honestly, they actually had an awesome stock portfolio. That was how they did it. So that's one way to do it, is to inherit. And then once you inherit it, if you are really lucky to get that, I mean, obviously, luck is not entirely part of it. You are going to have to go through probably some grief and whole like life situation. So that's number one. Number two is be in the right place at the right time to have your skill set be able to take advantage of the opportunities in front of you. So if you're in the right place at the right time and you're able to grind and start a business and benefit from that business in some way, that's another way to get wealthy. You got to be sort of lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time and have the right skill set for the right business. So that's another way. Wrapped up in that is all of this number two is what I call being the beneficiary of a tail event, meaning this is going to get a little technical. Let's talk about statistics, the bell curve. There we go. At one end of the bell curve is like all the really good stuff. You bought Tesla stock, whatever, 10 years ago or something, or you bought Apple stock 20 years ago or whatever you did, or you ended up selling a whole freaking shit ton of cars to somebody in one small town and therefore you earned a lot of money. So a tail event is something that gets you really wealthy kind of really quickly, but that is probably not extremely repeatable either by you or other people, right? So again, nothing wrong with it. It just is what it is. And it's probably not a repeatable strategy. So in order to maintain that wealth, you have to recognize that you are the beneficiary of that event and that you then need to maintain that wealth by being a little bit paranoid and probably getting a little more diversified, right? Because you got this concentrated wealth. The third way to get wealth is to get rich slowly. And that just means
bring in
what?
Spend less than you make. What?
That's it. Oh what? My God.
I hate to break it to you. Lotteries
in I'm gonna put the lottery in the second category.
Yeah.
That concentrated tail event. Anything those, that is like
look at all the lottery winners over time. Almost zero of them retain any of the money because they
that's think because getting money. Wealthy and staying wealthy are not the same skill.
That's a great little quote for your package. Do you have that?
That's from The Psychology of Money, which is the book that I make all my clients read.
I did steal it on The Office. Remember on The Office where Michael said, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And he puts Michael Scott in big words and in tiny, tiny letters, he writes Wayne Gretzky because Wayne's the one that said that. You could make a big letter, Sarah Palmer,
right.
or whoever said that in The Psychology of
right.
Money.
I legitimately do require every client of mine who comes on as an ongoing partnership client of mine, they have to either read the book, audio the book, or listen to the author's podcast, because I can tell within 6 months to a year if that client has done that or not. Because when they read that book or digest that information, they are so much more likely to actually make their time and their treasure match their vision and their values. So much more likely.
Okay, because so let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Real estate professionals on the balance. So if this is not you, quit taking it personally. This is on the balance. Mm-hmm. Have an unhealthy relationship with money.
Mm-hmm.
As in when they meet with a client, they are giving solid counsel, very truthful, detailed information. When it comes to their own finances, they have blinders on. They don't know what's in the bank account. They bounce checks. They spend more than they have. They're charging things they shouldn't charge. And then they just figure, I'll sell a house and get myself out of the hole. So they're continually seeking a replenishment of funds, but it never solves the initial problem, which is an unhealthy relationship with
yeah.
money, which we also know is the core of most divorces. So.
Yeah.
Book, The Psychology of Money, do you find that it starts solving some of those underlying
yes.
issues with
yes.
unhealthy money relationships?
Absolutely. Because it's a collection of short stories. So it's very easy to read. Like,
we,
you know, there's, yeah, like there's one of the chapters, there's only one page.
That's probably the favorite chapter. Ask anybody
but,
what scripture in the Bible, they know they're all like Jesus wept. Like, see, you always are trying to find the shortest one. There's a one-page
right.
chapter in this book?
Right. There is a one-page chapter in that book. But one of my favorite takeaways, this is not a particular quote from the book, but it's a concept that I live by. You will spend less if you just care less about what other people think about you. I swear to you.
Have you ever seen that manifest in your husband's life since he's a real estate person?
Oh, yeah. He does not spend much money. He spends money on coffee.
Fair.
God, that man. He bought, we're in Benton, like I said, Bentonville, Arkansas, which is actually a great little town. We sort of picked
it's
it
really
randomly.
Cool. And that's a great airport too.
Northwest oh my gosh.
Arkansas airport's so nice.
Well, we drove, but
we
it was sort of random.
Find out it's lovely.
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of staying nearby, but yeah, it's a great little town. We went to this coffee shop that roasts their own beans because that's kind of his big thing. And he was like, he picked out the one that he wanted just based on the descriptions. And it was like 10 ounces of coffee beans for $30.
I have no reference point for that. So I'm going to say, that's extravagant.
Oh, yeah. Let's just say in Austin, Texas, I mean, you could buy some fancy ass beans in Austin, Texas. And usually it's like $15 or $16 for the fancy.
This is Cadillac coffee.
This is Cadillac coffee.
But you have wealth and healthy financial
yeah.
mindsets, it's okay to splurge on Cadillac.
Right, exactly. So that's the thing I tell clients is he doesn't spend money on things he doesn't care about. Like he spends money on things he does care about and that he truly gets enjoyment from.
Like the kids and you, because children are
yeah.
very expensive. And so you may as well.
Oh, yeah. We spend a lot of money on childcare.
But that day is going to be over and then you're going to be like me facing college two times.
Yeah.
And so it's
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really fun. Read that book, The Price You Pay for College, today. I'm not kidding.
The Price You Pay for College? What's the premise of that book before I read it?
So it's by a journalist that does mostly higher education reporting. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of breaks down what to look for when you're on the college search, like figure out what matters to you and your kid in that college search, and then how to look for those things in the school.
Oh, that's pretty. I don't want my kids indoctrinated. And if their degree is in studies, I'm not paying for it. And third, if whatever I pay for, my kids are signing a note to me because they're going to have to pay me back because I can't finance retirement, but they can finance college. But I'm a better bank than they may. And the government using this as carrot and stick right now is infuriating to me as a taxpayer. But, you know, that's a whole different conversation. But
the other big thing in there is it talks a lot about how to get merit aid, like what are the best like strategies for merit aid and, you know, that kind of thing.
A lot of it goes unapplied, which is insane. Yeah. I applied for everything, including like I got a soil and water conservation scholarship, but I wasn't a soil and water student. I just, nobody else applied for it.
I got a rodeo scholarship and I hadn't been to the Houston rodeo. Yeah, I know. Really weird.
Wait a minute, you weren't like roping and riding. You just applied for it.
No.
Are you serious?
I swear. Amazing. 10 grand.
Okay, so we totally are rabbit holing here on college, but all right, so let's wrap our episode up because my people have no attention span. What is the one thing you would tell real estate professionals about financial planning after they read The Psychology of Money? So they've all raised their little right hand and written in the comments, you're going to read Psychology of Money after
or audiobook it or listen to the podcast. It's the Morgan Housel podcast, one or the other.
We're not going to judge
after yours. Reading,
but you probably should read it and get your little highlighter out because it's how you retain information. But anyway, after they absorb the knowledge of Morgan, what's the next thing you wish they would all do, Sarah?
Take your check that you get, and I want you to divide it into three bank accounts.
I tell my people to do this, but I put them in four bank accounts. What are your three?
I know. So profit, taxes, and then, so you put the money all into one. There is the more complicated profit first system, which has like five bank accounts. I have found most real estate professionals just can't deal with that. So I have them in three. So you put the money into operating expenses. That's where you deposit. You pay all your stuff out of that. So let's say you get a 10 grand paycheck. Congratulations. You just did a great job. Take about 10% of it every time and immediately on the same day that you deposit the check, take 10% of that. So $1,000, put it in your profit savings account. Do that every time you get a check because you are running a business, right? So do that first. Pay yourself first, that profit, 10% profit. Now, depending on your tax situation, you got to talk to your tax professional, financial preparer, a planner to figure out about how much to save for taxes, but it's somewhere between 15 and 30%, depending on your situation. So ask first. Take that chunk that you've been told and put that in another account. And then every quarter, pay those quarterly taxes out of that account, okay? That leaves you, let's call it 60, 70% left. Out of that business, out of that 60, 70%, you shouldn't be running your business on any more than 30, any more, probably 25. So that means your life is being run at about 30, 35%. So that 30, 35%, that's your money to run your life, okay? The profit is like your quarterly bonus. So at the end of every quarter, you have built up this little profit account that has a few $1,000 in it or a lot of $1,000 in it or $100 in it, whatever. And you take that profit and you use that towards something you value. Use it towards anything except taxes and reinvesting in your business. So use it towards anything that matters in your life. It might be a debt pay down. It might be saving for retirement. It might be paying for college. It might be vacation, whatever. That is your quarterly bonus because you ran a good business.
And if you get to the end of the quarter and there's nothing in that account, you need to prospect more and done some deals so you can have something in your account to play with. Okay. I love that counsel and advice. All right, Sarah. So if they want to come talk to you and find out how you could give them even more personalized advice, whether they are trying to figure out how to run their business or their household more wisely, what is the best way for people to find Sarah Ponder?
Yeah. So we are realestatewealthplanning.com. And then on Instagram, realestatewealthplanning, we got an underscore in between each one of those words. So I'm sure we'll link to it.
It's in the show notes, people. We know
it's in the show notes.
Scores and dashes. Don't stress.
Don't stress.
The baskets too. It's all in the show notes.
I'm sure email's in there too. So Sarah@realestatewealthplanning.com. But yeah, we'll schedule a quick call. And then if I'm not the right one for you, we will send you to somebody who is.
I love that. Making sure it's a good fit. As we say in Texas, there's a butt for every saddle, and make sure your butt fits the saddle.
That's right.
What that means too is you've also got to read The Psychology of Money, because you know that's your homework assignment before you reach out to somebody. If you didn't.
I mean, it doesn't have to be before, but I say within the first 6 to 12 months of when we start working together. Yeah.
You know she's going to ask you, so you may as
well. I have a client engagement standards document that you will sign that says you will do it. I am not.
For real? That's awesome.
I am not playing. I'm not playing.
Well, I mean.
Because look, I'm not captaining a ship that's going to go down.
I'm not captaining a ship that's going to go down. You are full of everybody else's little friends.
That I came up with.
Put them all over your Instagram account and on the internet. Abraham Lincoln said everything. So Sarah Ponder Mason.
Pretty much.
Hey, thank you so much for coming on
Absolutely.
The show.
Absolutely.
Some great little insights and homework assignments for my listeners and viewers of all shapes and sizes, whether you're in real estate or out. This is good information to help you get a handle on your finances, because whenever the economy is wonky, you do not have to panic if you are planning. So instead of panicking, do a little planning and check out all Sarah's information in the show notes. Again, Sarah, thank you for coming on the show, and we'll see you sometime.
All right. See you later. Thank you.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one-up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram @LeeThomasBrown, or tweet me @LeeBrown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.